The medium is the message, body makes a dance. Love is the product, the joke is in, the joke is in, the joke is in your face.
I'm Are You Serious? And this is my show. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show, a production of MondoGlobo.net. And today is Diana Brown's big day to shine because, well, it's not actually today, but she did go off to a hotel and she did strange things.
You're making this sound more exciting.
Nice preface to the story.
With Terry Zwigoff and Dan Close.
Hey, Dan Wilson of Cassandra's Call Productions came with me.
And and we'll be able to hear the results of their intercourse later on.
We changed rooms halfway
in the show. And Zwigoff and Close, of course, are the director and screenwriter for Art School Confidential, the film that will be out by the time you're listening to this show. And we saw it. We liked it.
We liked
some of the,
it a
some
lot.
Of the reviewers are not that up on it. But
yeah, screw them.
Yeah, fuck them. Anyway. And I do want to let you know that our website at areyouseriousradio.com now takes audio comments. And this is the last time I'm going to read this whole thing, so you better get used to it. And if you've got something to say about what you hear and you have a microphone of some sort that goes into your computer, go to the site, click any button that says send me an audio. And if we like what you say, we may play it on a future show. We may even argue with you. And we are here with our usual gang of three. There's Jeff Deal saying nay over there on the corner. And
Steve
Robles.
Doing the impersonation of the great white owl.
And the lovely and talented. Did I say that last week? I need a new opening. The still drug addicted Diana Brown.
Hey, we all have substantiated. I've been out of rehab for a while. That's if I ever went in. But I'm excited because, you know, RU, I was reading in the National Geographic and we have hope. And we may not be able to change the decider's mind about much, but apparently a brain in a petri dish can fly a jet fighter simulator. A scientist, Dr. Thomas DeMars, a biomedical engineer at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And believe it or not, progressive things.
It's my alma mater.
Woohoo! Really?
What pride.
That's God, I knew I shouldn't have left those brain cells back there.
You could be back there.
Now look what they've done with them.
Now's my chance to work in a Molly Hatchet reference. I've been waiting for months for that one.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
See, that proves that some...
A Molly Hatchet reference. Gator country.
That's right. Not only, you know, do the bushes raise things down there, but apparently a brain can be grown in a petri dish. But the deal on this is it's a collection of 25,000 neurons. They're taken from the brain of a rat, and they're connected to a computer via 60 electrodes. And they started doing this because they wanted to find out how the neurons do what they do, and then they could apply those rules to software or hardware for novel types of computing. So, they could take bits of your brain.
I can't fly a plane. Not like a rat can.
That's assuming he's got that many neurons left. Left to spare.
I heard they originally wanted Top Gun Tom Cruise's brain, but he wasn't available, so they just got a rat.
They just got a rat because there are a lot of genetic similarities.
And also Goose wasn't available, or Ice, or anybody else from the Top Gun flight team.
Yo. A good one. Wow, you really outdid me with that. Adding on to my Top Gun.
So while the boys fight it out, it seems like what they did is they took the cells and Mr. DeMars comments on how you take the cells out of, you know, the cortex and you put them there in a cultural wasteland, a petri dish or the red states, and the only thing that's going on right there is this spontaneous reconnecting. But after a while, when they start receiving info from the computer, I said commercial. See how programmed I am? When they start receiving information from the computer about flight conditions,
they start saying, "Tell us what to bomb."
Exactly.
Yeah. And see, this is what I said all along. This goes right into last week's interview about the artificial intelligence on Neophiles.
Exactly.
The super intelligence comes in. What are you going to? They're going to bomb something. They're going to. Never mind.
Wait a second, though. These are rats, though.
But you know what they're saying? Some neural research people
are saying. And then it's going to be our brains, and then it'll be the super intelligent
It doesn't. I'm just. It doesn't matter. It's just brain cells, man. Whatever. They're well, all. They're malevolent.
They're saying this is. They're all malevolent. This is Diana Brown on special assignment for the Are You Serious show on the Mondo Globo Network. And I'm here at the Prescott Hotel in San Francisco. I'm here with Terry Zweigoff, the director of Crumb, Ghost World, Bad Santa, and now Art School Confidential. Terry, thanks for taking some time for us today.
You're welcome.
This is great. Now,
I'm learning what a podcast is for the first time.
Believe me, when I started doing the show, they had to explain it to me as well. But now this interview will exist forever.
Oh, great.
They can download
it. That's the other thing I love about the internet. Say one stupid thing and it exists forever. You can't get rid of it.
Isn't that amazing?
There's so many things that I've seen on sites like IMDb where it says like trivia about Terry Zweigoff. Everything is completely wrong. Zweigoff considered Larry David for the role of Bad Santa. No, I didn't in my wildest dreams. I love Larry David, but I'm not going to hire him as an actor to play Bad Santa. Where did that come from? So bizarre. And it's just on there as fact, and then other websites pick it up, and they...
It's just this constant reiteration of rumor.
Yeah. It feeds on itself.
Now, speaking of a rumor, is it true that your film career started completely by accident when you discovered a little-known blues artist.
Yeah, I had a horrible civil service job here in San Francisco working at the welfare department, and I was a collector of blues 78s from the 20s and found some very obscure, one-known existing copy of this record by this guy named Louis Bluey, which was obviously a pseudonym, and I tried to, with the intention to write a magazine article about whoever this guy was. I assumed he was dead at the time since it was in the 80s at this point. I actually found him living in the Midwest, and I went out to interview him for this little interview, and then he was such an incredible character, I wound up making a film about him, not really knowing what that entailed at the time.
Blind faith.
Yeah, blind faith, which was luck at that point, yeah.
That's incredible. So now, you worked with Daniel on Ghost World, and this whole team pretty much. It's kind of a reunion for the whole team. Is that correct?
I wanted to make this film. I love the producers, and I love Dan. And everybody treated me so well on Ghost World, and we had so much fun that it was, you know, that was definitely an influence on making this film.
Now, after you made Ghost World, this may be another rumor that I've read somewhere online, but it said you probably would not go back to documentary filmmaking. Is that still true for you?
I've been working on documentary off and on for years, which is this really uncommercial labor of love, this whole history of Hawaiian music.
And really?
It was shot by the woman who shot Crumb, Maurice Alberti.
Oh, yeah.
It's a really good film. It's just completely uncommercial. You know, it maybe would show on PBS one night, and, you know, nine people would watch it and appreciate it. It's so esoteric what's good about it. But, you know, it's very hard at this point. I've got this whole overhead now and just, you know, trying to pay off this house remodel, and, you know, you really got to make money, and documentary filmmakers are just saints. I don't know how they do it. There's just no money in it at all. Thankless.
But incredible. We all loved Crumb. That was
someday I might go back and try to finish that thing or do some. I occasionally see other topics. I think, boy, that would be a great documentary. But
like, besides that, what were you thinking about?
Well, did you ever see this documentary called Overnight? It's about a bartender that Miramax signs to a 3-picture deal.
No.
It's really an underrated film. It's a really great film. This guy is just... It largely was the inspiration to me in how to direct Ethan Suplee, who plays the aspiring filmmaker.
Right.
Jerome's roommate, Vince.
He's amazing.
You know, it's very much based on this guy. A lot of people think it's based on Kevin Smith. It's really not. It's based on this guy. I forget the guy's name, but he was just such a pompous blowhard. His overnight success went to his head so quickly. He became so arrogant instantly. It was really...
Within 3 days.
Like, within 3 seconds.
That's
amazing.
It was
really amazing. He was just... It's a really interesting film.
That's cool.
Very funny film.
Well, hopefully you'll get to make that. And you'll be able to make whatever you want.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Now, I understand that you mentioned you worked in the welfare office.
Right.
Was that precipitated by having seen a film titled Welfare?
I actually saw this Frederick Wiseman film called Welfare. And although it was a pretty grim, depressing affair, as most of his films are, I like his films very much. For some reason, planted this seed in my head that somehow had me applying for a job, the civil service job, the welfare. I can't even explain it. And I got this job. And
talk about grist for the mill, though.
I eventually met Frederick Wiseman and was trying to tell him this, and he just was rather uninterested in what I had to say. And then some film festival was chewing his ear off about how his film led me to get this job. He just thought I was crazy.
So do you have people that come up to you and say, Terry, it's because of you that now I'm...
Occasionally, I usually get people coming up to me if I go to a film festival or something, or do some Q&A at a screening. There's always some guy who comes up to me afterwards with his DVD of his film. You know,
of course.
Says, well, look at my film. Like, usually, I just leave it in the hotel room because I've seen too many of them. I just take them home and look at them, and just like, oh God, they're all just like, they're rather impressive technically, some of them, but they never can tell a story. They're just always confused and weird. And this one guy, literally, I was having dinner with Malkovich at Sundance. We went to Sundance to promote this film, and we're just in some dive Chinese food restaurant at like midnight, right before it closed. Nobody was in there, and this guy was just staring at Malkovich, and eventually came over and started bothering him and showing him this thing. And he actually had like a little video monitor with him. He was playing us his trailer of his film. And it eventually came to me, and you know, I was trying to be nice to the guy, you know. So I watched it, and it's like only 30 seconds long. But I said to him, I said, I have no idea what it's about after seeing that. This plane goes by, and then there's like this desert, and then it's just like, you have to make the trailer give you a sense.
Blame it on prosumer models of technology.
Yeah.
People can now go make movies even if they don't know.
Boy, I said, what's it about? I have no idea.
Now, you've given a lot of credit to your producer for part of your success. I'm sorry, now, what's her name again?
Helfand?
Yes.
Yeah, it's her and John Malkovich and Russ Smith have this company called Mr. Mud in
LA. Mr. Mud, yes.
Yeah, they've been very loyal friends, yeah, very good producers.
I read that she helped you, she like really protects the project, makes sure you have final edit, and...
Yeah, she can, you know, it's never guaranteed, you can't get that in a contract in Hollywood.
No?
I can't anyway, maybe Clint Eastwood can, but I can't, but she does her best to, you know, to try to buffer the studio from you, you know, get in between that fight that you generally have to go through. You know,
that's important,
protect
isn't
you
it?
From the notes, or filter out the bad notes and give you the good notes.
Right.
But you know, at the end of the day, she normally will give you her suggestions, and then if you don't follow them, she leaves you alone. And she says, you know, I don't agree, but for better or worse, you know. I remember I was telling the guy before you, Michael Fox, I was telling him on Ghost World, she really wanted this one part of Ghost World taken out of the film, and I really fought her on it. I couldn't understand it, because to me it's the strongest moment in the film, and to this day it is. You know, I just saw it again recently on TV.
Which moment was that?
So this weird moment where Steve Buscemi takes out his scrapbook of the Coon Chicken Inn, of these old photographs, and this weird Lionel Belasco record's playing in the background. And he's just paging through these old photos. He says, you're just losing the audience here. I said, I don't care.
I love that.
Walk out. I thought it was a very strong moment.
I love little things like that.
It's
little
just like an odd moment. It's like
hints.
There's an odd moment in... that she was trying to get me to take out of Art School Confidential, where Jim Broadbent goes in the other room, and you don't know whether he's going to come back with an axe and murder Jerome or what. And Jerome's left sitting at this table waiting.
Right.
And I told him, I said, here's this photo. It's this photo of some woman from the Victorian era. Maybe it's Jimmy's mother. I don't know. Just pick it up and look at it.
Yes.
And then put it back down. And the DP came up to me and said, don't you want to get coverage, like an insert shot of the photo? I said, no, I don't. It doesn't have, just some little weird thing, you know, let people, if they want to read something into it. It's just, he's looking at this photo. Maybe it's his mother. I don't know. It's just unclear what it is. It's just something that just seemed truthful. I don't know why.
Now, I have to ask this. There's a moment, again, in Jimmy's apartment, probably my favorite scenes in the movie, in Jimmy's apartment.
Too.
I loved that character. But there's a moment where Jimmy is telling the main character, Jerome,
uh-huh,
about the facts of life in the art world. And in the background, the theme from Facts of Life is playing.
Yeah.
That was insane. Now, was that your little...
Was that Dan's idea?
Facts
of Life was, you know, what was it, more in the 70s or 80s? Or I'm a
yes.
little bit older than Dan, so I never saw an episode of Facts of Life in my life. But
it's hysterical that
it's
there.
Yeah, but I liked it. Yeah, when I heard the music, I said, oh, this is great.
Because it's so implausibly happy in the midst of that squalor.
Yeah. I have to get back to my masturbation now.
Yes! That was the capper of that odd moment.
That's great, I thought. Yeah.
Terry, we're not going to take up a lot more time, and I know you hate it when people ask you what you're working on next, so I'm going to ask you this. What are you listening to right now?
am I listening to? I don't have my record player set up because I just moved. So I'm not listening to anything. I never listen to the radio. I don't know. About all that's working in the way of media in my house is the television. We watched The Sopranos last night. Steve Buscemi directed an episode.
Yes.
It's very impressive, that episode. Just for no, if for no other reason, technically, it's like these long party scenes and people sitting at tables and dinner scenes. That stuff is really hard to direct. Continuity and eye line and coverage, man, that is really, my hat goes off to him. That was well directed.
Since you did bring that up briefly, what was your favorite moment shooting on Art School?
On Art School? I always like this. I always like these little details. This little thing, you know, when Jimmy fishes out like a used plastic coffee cup out of his trash can.
I love that.
In, and it makes a little pop when he unbends it. I don't know. Little things like that. It's just like, God, I love that sound. I love the fact that this cup is really filthy in the waste paper basket. And every time Jerome goes back to visit, he pulls out a cup out of the garbage.
The same kind of cup.
And I very intentionally had the production designer copy the look of Charles Crumb's bedroom for his apartment, have all these yellowed stacks of paperback books, and have everything look rather yellow and nicotine stained in there.
It did have that feel, now that you mention it.
Sort of very... And I also have him wearing like this almost the exact same flannel bathrobe that Steve Buscemi is wearing in Ghost World, and Charles Crumb has a very similar outfit on. And that was very sort of satisfying to me.
It's a wonderful circle. Terry, thank you so much.
You're
for
welcome.
Your time.
Are you serious?
Tell us, what do you think about the women's liberation? Wait a minute, man, don't say that. You gotta respect the women for what they believe, man. They might not go along with them, but you gotta respect them.
No.
Yeah.
Honey, don't worry. He's just a chad anyway.
fucking hoe. So think I'm going for a little blow. Just because I like to read, to meet you know. At least we don't let just anyone stick it in.
What a fucking slut.
Slut.
Tell us what do you think about the women's liberation? Wait a minute, man, don't say that. You gotta respect the women for what they believe, man. They might not go along with them, but you gotta respect them. Yeah, man, but you can't get mad with them about that. You gotta remember that it's theirs, now. One thing for sure, and everybody knows what's theirs is theirs and what's yours is yours. That right?
I'm here with Daniel Klaus, the cartoonist behind the popular 8-Ball series. He wrote the screenplay for Terry Zwigoff's Ghost World and for the upcoming Art School Confidential. Mm-hmm. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you.
I know you're hexa busy. Now, this is your second collaboration with Terry. How is this different for you?
Well, you know, with Ghost World, we were really kind of fumbling our way through it, and we wound up writing basically an entire script that we threw away before we kind of started over and came up with what finally emerged. And you know, with that one, I was taking characters that already existed and kind of just reconfiguring the story and giving them a new kind of adventure. And with this one, I went into it knowing I was going to write this thing for Terry. And so I had a very clear audience in my head, and that was Terry Zwigoff. You know,
right?
And I knew he had to respond to it for it to get on screen. And so,
right.
You know, I saw all these things in Ghost World that I wrote that I was really in love with, and he was like, I don't get it, and just, you know, it was gone. And so...
Never mind.
Yeah, too bad. And so, so with this one, I really thought, you know, I'm going to write something that will crack up Terry Zwigoff, because there's nothing better in the world for me than to crack up Terry Zwigoff.
I could see that.
He's got a certain something about him, and I find him to be a truly an amusing person, and so if I can make him laugh or respond to something, I feel a sense of accomplishment. So that was my goal with this film, was to write something that he was amused by.
Well, he seems to be quite amused and very happy with it. And we're all better for the two of you having found each other. Is it true that this is based on your own art school days in New York?
It is. You know, it's based on it in the same way like a nightmare is based on your daily life. You know, it's sort of the events of my experience in art school in the late 70s, early 80s, when it was, you know, this kind of pre-Giuliani hellscape. It was like, you know, the murder capital of the universe or
Welcome.
Something. And it was really, you know, there was a sense of danger about, you know, the streets of Brooklyn at that time. And
definitely.
It was... That infused my art experience, where you had to really kind of brave the outside world to bring your stupid painting to class. You know, had to
risk death.
Risk death at knife point to bring your conceptual toothbrush sculpture down the street. And you know, there's often funny images of kids, you know, carrying giant odd cardboard paintings through the streets of Brooklyn while the locals looked on, you know, like, what the hell is that?
and relax, it's just art.
Yeah, and so, you know, so it's all these kind of elements of you know, danger and obsession and you know, kind of, you know, seeing, you know, art girls for the first time and all these kind of things that...
The art girl montage is one of the funniest moments in
the
script.
Those are all absolute true moments of my my dating life in art school.
I have a friend who is a self-proclaimed, you know, aficionado of the dark, scary art babe. Right. And it was like a montage of his dating life. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
Now, I have to ask you, did you feel like art school prepared you for the realities of being a working artist?
No, it didn't at all. No, I mean, the thing I got out of art school was, you know, you're sort of grouped together with all the weirdos from their respective hometowns or respective high schools.
Right.
You know, that's their identity, is the weirdo artist. And then all of a sudden they say, oh, I'm going to go to New York and go to art school. And so you have this amalgamation of these guys. And so you can't help but meet two or three interesting people when you do that. And that's people ask me, they don't quite get from my movie or my comic, do you recommend going to art school? And I say, yes, for that reason. You know, don't worry about learning anything, but just meet these people, because that's who you need to meet, those guys. that's an essential part of your development, is to sort of take that step and find these people. And in terms of actually learning stuff, you know, I wanted to learn to draw comics, you know, and a kind of comic that didn't actually exist, which was this sort of, you know, adult underground kind of comic. And
right.
I would try to explain to people what I wanted to do, and they would say, well, I don't know what you're talking about, and you know, I don't have anything to offer you. I do abstract paintings, you know. And
right.
So it's a very odd thing. It's like going to school to learn, you know, biochemistry, and people say, well, I'm an astronomer, so I don't know.
The twin really don't kind of fuel one another.
I don't know how
but
to help you.
You were drawing comic books before you could even read. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's
like
true.
3 years old,
yeah.
And you were
yeah.
creating these fabulous yeah. things.
Well, I don't know about fabulous, but they were some attempt at doing, like, Superman comics.
What was Superman, like, the first comic you read?
Yeah, I don't know if it was Superman exactly, but, you know, superhero kind of things.
So, instead of words, what did you do?
I did not... I would see the word balloons, and I don't think I quite understood about words, but I could see these little symbols, and so I would draw word balloons with little chicken scratches.
That's wonderful.
And I would say, like, one of the greatest days of revelation of my entire life was... I used to draw Superman's insignia, you know, uh-huh. that has an S in it.
Sure.
But it's made up of these odd negative shapes.
Right.
And so I thought these were some kind of weird Kryptonian shapes floating in this shield thing on his chest. And I remember drawing this. And one day, all of a sudden, it solidified as an S. And that was one of those great moments of revelation.
Aha!
You know?
So
the scales fell from my eyes, and it's an S, you know.
That's
I remember
incredible.
Telling my dad, and he was like, yes, dummy, it is an S.
That's beautiful. Now, you're a dad now yourself,
yes,
correct?
Yes, I am.
How old is
little
you?
Charlie is almost 2 years old.
I read that he was born on the same day you received the word that Art School
Yeah, the film was going to be made, yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it was quite a day.
Yeah.
I would get all these calls and people, congratulations, and I'd have to go,
for which one? That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. So does he ever feel a bit, you know, overshadowed by the movie?
I know. He doesn't feel overshadowed by anything.
It's his other twin.
Yeah, no. The world revolves around him, so I don't
Do you have a picture?
You know, I don't. I was just telling my wife that she's got to give me a new picture. I had one, and it was so old, I took it out hoping to replace it, and I never put a new one in.
Well, I'm sure you will put another one in.
He's quite a cutie, though.
I bet. Has he, being a dad, has that changed your view of the world at all?
I don't know that it's changed my view of the world, but it's certainly given me a lot of things to think about and sort
sure.
of, you know, to see human evolution on such a small scale before your eyes.
It's
you
like
know?
A kit.
it's really remarkable in ways that I never quite anticipated. And, you know, literally, in the course of an afternoon, he can change and develop in a marked way
sure.
right before your eyes. And it's just mind-boggling to see. And you know, you really get a sense of humanity as just some kind of evolving fungus or something. You know, it's really
enormous petri dish.
It really is. You know, it's just sort of mold growing on a piece of bread or something. It's really, you get a very odd biological look at the world.
That's wonderful. Thank you, Daniel. Well, I want to just take a moment for the sidebar. I understand you took a foray into corporate America and designed a cola label for OK Cola.
Many years ago.
What kind of experience was that for you?
It was a very amusing experience. It was this thing where often you get ad agencies will send you like a mock-up for an ad that they want you to do an illustration for. And okay. It was always something that just seemed like it wrong that I never wanted to do. And then this one came and it seemed like the least likely to succeed thing I had ever seen. And they had another comic artist involved, and I called him up and I was like, this is going to be like the weirdest thing in history. To me it seemed like it was some kind of like a reverse pop art or something, where it was you know, instead of taking a Campbell's soup can and making it art, it was like just making a can that already was art or something. It was such an odd, interesting campaign, and it failed so miserably. I mean, I think Coke lost like many millions of dollars. It was a huge, huge flop, and so I was very proud to be part of that.
That was totally appropriate.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're about done here. I'm not going to take up too much more of your time, but I understand you have a birthday coming up. So I want to wish you happy birthday.
How did you know that? Where are you getting your info?
I do my research. Well, actually, I'm kind of proud because it makes you an Aries, and mm-hmm. I am as well. So,
oh, well,
so
right see on. You at the next meeting.
We'll see you at the next. Don't tell them about the meetings. Now everybody will want to come. Thank you so much, Daniel.
My pleasure.
And can you, briefly, before we go, can you tell us a little bit about what you are working on next?
You know, I'm just sort of starting a bunch of things right now, so I don't dare
don't
talk about
them. Out of the bag.
Well, just, you know, I'll say something about it, and then 2 years from now, somebody will say, you know, whatever happened to that, you know, the thing about the, you know, whatever, the dinosaur attack in outer space you were doing, and I'll go, what do you mean?
Well, we'll stay tuned for the dinosaur attack.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea now.
And if people want to find out more about your work, where do you direct them online?
I guess my publisher, Fantagraphics, has a website, fantagraphics.com.
Great. Well, thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Are you serious?
Love is the only weapon. Shit!
Are you serious?